as we help to spread the cheese.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. What if we are all, quote-unquote, mentally ill? What if the world around us was making us sick? Mike Hard, of legendary noise rock band God Bullies, believes that no one can exist without some sort of mental illness. And while the word illness pathologizes mental health conditions, there's no argument that the environment we live in today is deeply unwell. Mike says the confines of capitalism make our lives prone to mental strife and suffering. His ideas might be considered extreme, although they are completely reasonable, and his use of the term mentally ill could be problematic, although it fits our current situation to a T. Maybe the term mentally ill could be turned onto the world around us and those who control it, instead of being slapped onto those who are just trying to survive.
My name is Mike Hard, and I'm a singer and songwriter for God Bullies, Thrall, They Never Sleep, Hand Over Head, The Brain Saw. Got about 10 records out, several EPs. Getting ready to go on and do another record right now. So I guess that's my mental health right there, is creating and being part of a music scene. I got out of the Navy in 1980, went to college, and that's where I met David Livingstone, songwriter with me with God Bullies. We met in college and started making music and being able to keep putting records out, which is really fantastic. For me, especially, and I'm sure with a lot of other people, would be music is something we sought out and found some type of relief or satisfaction from, and a sense of tribalism or being part of something bigger than what we are, and reassurance of our thoughts. Like, am I thinking this way? Is this just me, or is there other people that think like this? Or it's funny, when I first started listening to music, I come up in the 70s, so, you know, it's like Aerosmith, Motley Crue, you know, Molly Hatchet, whatever. Eventually, I felt like I didn't belong to that tribe anymore. The songs in this music business wasn't representing how I felt and feel. About 1976, I got kind of turned on to, I was stationed in San Diego, California, and I got turned on to Lust for Life by Iggy Pop. No, never looked back, man. Any new music came after that, it was, you know, Sex Pistols, whatever, Sham 69, I mean, Joy Division, and just fell in love with this, I guess they call it underground probably because the main tribe doesn't accept it, but I found a lot of confidants, friends, and a lot of satisfaction from my pursuit following these type of artists and just going to their shows and listening to what they're saying and being appreciative of what they're sharing with me. I think that helps a lot. With me, I've had a few run-ins with therapists. None of them has been satisfying as what I get out of, I would say, alternative music, maybe. I don't know if it's alternative anymore, but...
What was it about the actual music that spoke to you?
With me, it's more so the lyrics and what they're saying. And then, of course, the lyrics usually match the music pretty well. The more out there the music, the more out there the thoughts, the more, wait, where's this coming from? Why are they thinking like this? And then trying to figure it all out in your mind. It gave me a big sense of tribe and not feeling alone in the world. Like, am I the only one that think that the government's crazy or that money has replaced God and things along that line? And then, of course, they get you into authors and writers that these artists were referring to, like William Burroughs or Jack Kerouac or Robert Anton Wilson. Once again, that reassurance. And then you see other people that say, yeah, I feel the same way about our government that's repressing us. It's a violent government and the whole manipulation of the mind and mind control. I mean, we live in an insane world that purposely is exploiting our, manipulating our mind. I don't know if I felt insane feeling that way or crazy for a long time, but then pretty much from the art and the music, I kind of said, you know, I'm not wrong with this. I think the government is manipulating our minds. And the music, with the underground music, a lot of these people came from real, like, even my childhood was terrible. Divorced family, ran away at 16, never looked back. The best thing I probably ever did was join the Navy. It made me grow up and be kind of more aware of other people's beside myself. When you're a teenager or a young man, you're kind of very self-centered. And military kind of opened up my mind that there's, hey, there's other people in the boat with me.
It's interesting what you said about this idea that we have a problem with our mental health, or we're having a problem with our thinking, when in fact, a lot of therapists and people in the mental health community believe that it's very much the environment that creates these issues.
Oh, I totally agree, though.
History of your family, or whether it's like living in a society where these things are going on, or whether it's, you know, living in poverty or living with addiction, like these are all things that are kind of around us and exacerbate mental health.
Well, some of them are our own remedies. Just want to numb yourself to a world that you can no longer be a part of, or you don't want to exist, or you just want to give up on. And drugs are a great escapism. I personally don't see anything wrong with it unless they're being prescribed to you by a therapist who's supposed to be trying to help you. But I mean, I could tell you a very interesting story. Years and years ago, I was feeling a lot of anxiety, and I actually went to see a counselor. The counselor, in 20 minutes, just through conversation, she diagnosed me with situational anxiety and gave me a prescription for pills. And I'm looking at her, and then later I'm leaving, I talk to my wife, I go, I think we all have situational anxiety. Every one of us might get put in a situation where we're going to get anxiety from it. But this pill is not the answer. It's not the remedy. And, you know, you start reading books about pill farms and how therapists can have more patients if they prescribe pills to them, because they don't have to have so much meetings and so much counseling and talking. They can give them the pill and they'll remove the highs and lows, and give you a steady stream, whether you need it or not. But yeah, this therapist was like, take one every 4 hours, the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I just felt that was just a total sham. And then I started reading more about it. And then you figure out, yeah, a lot of these mental therapists are just pill farms. Even depression, like, it's very easy to confirm depression. I mean, we all get depressed. There's certain events that will depress every one of us. So is that a mental illness? Does that have to be treated with a steady regimentation of, what, Xanax or whatever?
Well, that's where the word situational comes in. It's like you said, I mean, we all have situations. For myself, I live with bipolar, and that's a very serious mental health condition that requires medication, requires therapy, and a bunch of different things to stay stable.
As far as bipolar goes, do you think that it's environmental or genetic, or?
It's a combination of a bunch of things. I mean, it's very hard to pin that down because you can't go back and figure out where it all started. But what a lot of people believe, and I subscribe to, is that you're dealing with a Venn diagram of trauma, you know, upbringing, family history, genetics, environmental considerations, things like stress can exasperate that or kind of bring that on. In my belief, there was like a little latent seed there that sprouted into this mental health crisis because of things that were going on around me in my life. And I've had it my whole life, but it may have not presented itself.
You're saying there's like a triggering mechanism that, you don't know what it is, but something triggers this.
Yeah.
I like this new term with the spectrum. Where are you on the spectrum? Maybe we all have ADHD to a certain extent. And who are you to tell me where I am on the spectrum? And why do you think that's mental illness? You spoke about genetics might be a small percentage of it. I really believe it's upbringing, parenting. I have three kids and I love them all. They're all doing really, really good. I don't know if it's more my wife or me or whatever, but they're doing good and are contributing to society. But if you've got to get a driver's license to drive a car, I know this sounds out there. I think you almost need to get a license to be a parent, because just a few missed moves in the upbringing of a kid and you can wreck their whole life. And I know that from personal experience. Just money and financial security and replacing certain symbols to manipulate and control your mind, I think happens every day to all of us. I mean, just look at advertising, look at an Exxon sign or the symbolism that goes on all the packaging that everyone has to have be branded, and so that your mind goes quick to that, because your brain is so powerful, but yet so fragile. We have instincts in us that aren't really developed. We only use 5% of our brain. I mean, the whole mammalian side of our brain service certain ways, but might not. And of course, that might cause some type of mental illness. But I really agree with you, Factor. A lot of it has to do with the world we live in right now. And I really think that everyone really wants to belong to a tribe and be confirmed that, yeah, hey, I've been through this before. It's okay. You're going to get through this.
Yeah.
And listening, what I've learned with my children is the most important thing you can do to a kid is listen to what they're saying. You don't have to agree with them. You don't have to punish them. You just have to listen.
Totally.
Yeah, and I think so many kids just don't get that listening, and they don't feel like they're being heard. That starts you kind of down that road where you're not accepted. Maybe you're not a part of the tribe. And mental illness is really interesting, especially when you look at even before capitalism, like, say, how did the Christians handle mental illness, you know, up until, you know, Freud or something? And then how did we handle mental illness, say, after Freud or when the Quakers took over those institutions in America? It was pretty much to kick those people out of the tribe and institutionalize them and just say they're over here and don't worry about it and make them no names, nothings.
Yeah. Well, I think also you mentioned the parenting and how that translates into as we grow up, as we kind of look at where we're going to be accepted, what sort of group we belong to. And there's this hierarchy in parenting that starts fairly early on, if not right away. And if you're so used to being looked down on and sort of parents are way up here and you're way down in the bottom, I'm not saying all parents are like this because I like to think that I'm not, and it sounds like you're not. That carries on in life. And then you've got these situations where we're all fighting to be at a certain level of hierarchy, right? So you're fighting to have the better job, the better money, the better car, the better this. And
but see, that what you're saying right now, using that word better, yeah, that's an institutional word.
Yeah, exactly.
What did the American Indian do with mental illness in their tribe, in their small tribe? How did they treat people that they felt were mentally impaired? Did they just kick them off the side? Did they let them walk at the back of the pack? Society changes how they treat and how they judge people as mental illness. If you look at the world, I mean, I would say a lot of these people in Congress right now, especially these Republicans, who have no empathy at all for poor people, for immigrants, for people coming to America for the same reason why their parents came to America or their grandparents came to America, but yet having no empathy for these people doing the damn same thing. This is where you start getting mental illness becoming institutional, because it's just so easy to make the mind hate, and it's harder to love because you actually have to communicate to love. Hate speak, people love it. I mean, the society we live in condones it. We live in a violent society. That violence is condoned by our government. I mean, you want to talk about mental illness? Think about when you read any studies on serial killers and people like that. A lot of them go back to parenting, bad parenting. You can finally find that DNA out. But, you know, when you read about some of these lives of these people that commit these terrible crimes against humanity, it kind of goes back to parenting.
Thinking about that and some of the kids that I see at punk shows and, you know, a lot of the people that I met over the years who are into punk rock did have these tough upbringings, whether they had a lot of acute trauma incidents through their lives or whether their parents were just awful or they didn't get the sort of attention they needed from the schools or whatever. A lot of these kids end up being punks. So I'm wondering about
or
that
bullied
connection.
By the kids at school. I mean, that's another great one to set off. You're inadequate. You're not enough. The society we live in, a capitalist society where we're taught to consume instead of to care. And as it gets even more like in this time we're living now, you're going to just see more mental illness because the two things don't go together. It's like a mixed signal. And that mixed signal, your mind kind of is easy for your mind to mess up. William Burroughs says it perfectly, is that we live in a junkie society, that capitalism is nothing more than junkiedom. That when you got lots of money and you got lots of dope, you're at the top of the thing. You feel you're invincible and you're happy as hell. But when you start either can't get any money or the money gets cut off, then now you got anxiety. Now you got sickness. Now you start thinking, do I need to steal to get the money for it? Is that mental illness or is that just responding to stimulant in your environment?
Yeah.
There's just so many little variables, but it all goes back. People just want to be listened to. They really do. They just want to feel like they're part of the tribe, that I'm not the only one thinking like this. And I told you about the one instance where in 20 minutes I'm diagnosed with situational anxiety and I get a pill diet for the rest of my life. But my first run-in with a therapist was really funny. It was when I was a kid. And my parents divorced, six kids. I was the oldest kid. And I ran away from home a couple times. My dad and my stepmom thought I needed counseling. They signed me up for some counseling. And I was like, I think I was 16 at the time. And I went through a few sessions. And the counselor, the therapist actually, after my parents were gone, pulled me aside and she goes, Mike, you know what? You're a typical teenage boy. You're experimenting, you're seeking, you're curious. This is all normal. What's not normal is your parents. They're crazy. And that alone, at 16, you would not believe what that did to me. All of a sudden, it opened me up and said, yeah, my parents are crazy. They are nuts. They're divorcing. They're abusive physically and mentally. And just all this weight came off my shoulder. And that's all it took was for this one person to say, it's not you causing the situation. It's your parents.
How did that feel to hear?
Oh, it was so great to hear, especially at that age. Because, yeah, I was experimenting with drugs and sex, all that stuff. You're at that age, you know. And obviously, it made me feel too secure because I ran away from home and never came back about a couple months after that. So, but, yeah, you know, and you look at the punk rock, and a lot of those kids have that same problem with their parents, where their parents say, you're evil, you're bad, you're not adjusted, get a job. And the whole time, it's just negative, negative, negative. To make that a positive takes a lot of mental strength to turn that around. And sometimes you can't do it yourself. And I'm not saying all therapy's bad, but the run-ins I've had with therapists have been terrible. And it's funny, before psychology, we had the church, right? I mean, pretty much that was where you'd go. If you had some mental problems, you'd go and you'd confess, or you'd go talk to the pastor and say, yeah, you know, I like men instead of women. I don't know what's wrong with me. But that's what we had then. And now what do we have? We have therapy. And the people that you go to therapy, they're not going because they want to hear you or they want to solve the problem. They're going there because they're paid to listen to you. It's a transaction. It's not like, I want to help you. It's like, I'll help you if. And so to me, therapy, I haven't had a lot of good run in it. Although I know people that have great therapists, and I guess it's all a matter of who the person you go to. But I know a person I was kind of talking to about it. They said, I go to a therapist not because I feel like I'm mentally ill or I'm different. I go to a therapist to give me tools so I can deal with this world I live in. And that helps them. And so that was a successful story of therapy.
I shy away from the term mental illness because it puts me at a disadvantage mentally.
Well, don't feel bad because we're all mentally ill. You cannot exist in this world or put a smile on your face unless there's something mentally wrong with you, because if you look at it, you should be traumatized and have PTSD from what you're seeing in this world right now. I mean, what's going on in Ukraine, what just happened in Iran. Man, this world, just with the money and now with kids, with food insecurities, where our government says that our youngest and brightest don't need to eat. All this stuff just breeds, I don't know what it is. I guess you're right. Mental illness is not the right word because we've all been affected by these type of transactions.
Yeah.
I think the people calling people mentally ill or saying, I think that you have mental illness, might be the ones that are kind of numb to the world and have the mental illness themselves. And just because you're a mental therapist, you think everyone's mentally ill, where maybe they're not. Maybe because I'm coming to see you, it's showing it some type of sanity.
There's projecting that onto someone else where, in fact, this person that you're seeing as mentally ill, quote unquote, is actually maybe the closest to sanity that there is. They're dealing with a condition.
Sure.
They're dealing with something that's tough and is affecting their lives and has symptoms, things that affect their life.
We've come so far, but have regressed, and the regression is all on purpose. Very simple. Our minds respond to symbols, signals, and acceptance or tribalism. We all know that in a pack, we have a better chance to survive than individually. That would go back to me with punk rock. Individually, I'm not surviving. I'm having issues I can't deal with. But when I get into the music with these people, where we all kind of have that identity of interest, I feel a sense of empowerment now. And to me, that's what rock did. It gave me a sense of empowerment. And it made me feel like these issues that all of us deal with in our life, it's not just me. And it helps, man. It just helps having people to talk to and listen to and realize we're all basically the same.
What's it been like in your life when you haven't had music, when you haven't been active with writing music, playing music?
Really, my whole adult life, I've been in one band or another. I think the most frustrating part is when bands break up. and then you wonder why. You feel bad it didn't work out. And then you have to move on to that next relationship and start over again. But I've told people over and over, I can't wait till 20 years from now if someone finds a Godbully album in a Goodwill bin for a dollar and puts it on and says, what the heck? Oh, yeah, I know. God dang. Yeah, man, I know what this is. You know, to me, that won't be there to see it probably, but I think there's going to be a few people that say, yeah, I know what this guy's talking about.
A lot of noise rock or heavier rock, like Godbullies, like if you call it a scene, that style of music, I mean, a lot of the bands are very different, but could be lumped into the same scene. A lot of it is very angry and misanthropic and
right.
Dangerous and all these things. And I think people maybe that don't know much about it would be very like, oh, I don't know about that.
Right.
How has that been over the years with being labeled as this angry, scary guy?
Well, I know just the name Godbullies, people start thinking about Jesus Christ like he's some type of God. And, you know, Godbullies was very simple. It's just almost like a sentence, like whatever your God is, it's going to tell you what to do. So if your God is money, he's going to bully you around. You're going to do whatever that money God says. Your God is Jesus Christ, then you're going to go after these immigrants and not let them into America. That's what Godbullies basically saying is like you allow this outside force called God, but it could be God can be several things. As Timothy Leary and a lot of people have said, God can be a chair. You allow this into your brain and it bullies you around. So that's all Godbullies meant. I'm pretty wild-eyed and crazy on stage. I kind of got that thing going, but I consider myself a storyteller, and I get into a character of the person telling that story. Stuff I've been writing more about recently has been more about, of course, the world we live in, and kind of I told you so, because this record came out 30 years after last Godbully record, and we were pretty much saying the same thing 30 years ago that we're saying right now, only it's in our face and more intense. There we were just saying this was going to happen. It's pretty much proven that totalitarianism and fascism is the goal of our government. And I don't know if they feel that's the way they can dominate us. Replacing God with money is, and being able to control the flow of money should be enough for governments to be happy. But of course, they're not. They want to imprison us. They want to kick us out. They say we're not good unless we have a job. But, you know, think how insane it has to be to go to a Walmart every day 9 to 5. To me, that's a definition of insanity. But that's normal. To your government, you're paying your taxes, you're slightly above the poverty line, you're okay. You're not insane.
It's the American dream.
Yeah, the American dream, right. And that, once again, that goes to like words and triggering and the American dream. Well, what is the American dream to the kid that doesn't have a breakfast in the morning or lunch, and then he comes home and he has cereal with water? Does that start where we're talking about mental illness there? Or opportunity not taken? I mean, I don't know. It's a really rough world. And when you can pull the rug out from underneath anyone at any time, that makes people have a lot of situational
anxiety. Yeah.
Anxiety. Yeah. When you know this could just be gone. Arresting Americans and send them to Africa or El Salvador in prison, that's going to cause some anxiety. So the tensions are on purpose. It's to breed this mindset that you're not safe anywhere. So consume, consume, consume. And once again, I think that's the basis of any mental illness. If you start listening to this messaging, that's just not, it's totally against human consciousness in the tribe and living together and trying to make this world work together. There's a lot of people that they think are mentally ill that actually are doing the right thing by standing up against this.
When you think back to that time when you went into the doctor's office or counselor's office and they threw spaghetti at the wall and said, okay, you need to take these pills, because they could have given you any number of different pills.
Sure.
Do you look now and think, you know, okay, so I had a quote-unquote situational anxiety, and thinking about how you are now and what you're dealing with in your life now? Like, have you been able to shed that idea? Or
I didn't even go pick up the pills.
Okay.
I just said, wait a minute, I've been in this room 20 minutes with my daughter running around picking up everything that she sees in sight, and you're diagnosing me, and come back in 2 weeks or when the pills run out and I'll give you another script and I'll bill you again. And that is not therapy. That was just a joke. And then when she said situational anxiety, I realized right away that, yeah, I do have situational anxiety, just like any other human being that gets put in a situation where they don't know how to respond. I thought it was pure quackery.
What can someone do? I'm going to ask you to give advice now, and I know giving advice isn't always the easiest, but what would you suggest someone do to stay away from being, like we said, mentally ill?
I would try to find a tribe that you can associate with that will help you, people with the same identity of interest that you believe in. And I think that goes back to the reason why we got into punk rock is because we found people that thought like us, and that gave us self-awareness and made us feel good about ourselves. Rock and roll is the remedy. It's not like a place where bad kids go to act out and slam dance and be violent into each other. Believe it or not, people go there because of acceptance.
That was my conversation with Mike Hard of God Bullies, god-bullies.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Thinning trees and dense brush from a forest can help reduce the risk of severe wildfire. The brush and branches that are removed are often burned or chipped, but at an 80-acre ecological reserve in Northern California, they're used for environmental restoration instead. Brock Dahlman of the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center says during extreme rain, water runs off the hillsides into seasonal channels, or gullies. Over time, the gullies erode and deepen.
And those gouges then, as they erode, deliver sediment and dirt to our streams, which turns them chocolate milky and is really bad for fish. It's bad for water quality.
So his team uses a practice called gully stuffing. They take woody brush from forest thinning projects and layer it into an eroding gully.
And make like a lasagna where we start with the green boughs and the logs and the limbs and the boughs and the logs and the limbs.
He says the added plant matter helps slow erosion and reduce the sediment flowing into streams below. And over time, it breaks down into spongy compost that absorbs water. So as landowners and agencies work to protect forests from wildfires, Dahlman says they have an opportunity to create healthier waterways too. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.